This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is Senator Penny Wong. You're listening to Australia's Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. Welcome to our little show of history items and things in current affairs. And to share the eating of the currants, I have Gordon.
Yes, well, I'm not having an affair. I'm having a genuine relationship.
Oh, good for you.
And I'll stick to the grapes.
Oh, all right.
And once again, apologise to the pianist who we've just cut off on his solo. There he is. Oh, no, he's brought the strings with him this week.
Oh. He might have been the bloke that I saw on the train this morning who was studying scores.
All right.
Footy scores?
No, not footy scores, just musical scores. Oh. Yes. So it's probably him. That's what it is.
Oh, I went to a party and took my harp along.
I took my harp to a party and nobody asked me to play. That's Gracie Fields.
Is it? Well, I certainly don't know anything about it, obviously, as I didn't know the name of the song.
Oh, yes.
Our show is, as I mentioned, dealing with history things, and quite often we don't realise history is in the making, because today's events are actually tomorrow's history lesson. Well, over the weekend, we had that particularly interesting situation where the Wentworth events came and went. And there was all sorts of turmoil in the middle. And that was mainly to do with the postal votes. And you've got to realise that postal votes can't be considered all in until there's been 2 weeks elapsed to all arrive.
Chris, I was talking about that with Philip. And does that mean you can vote after the election and it comes in? Or how do they check that you posted it in time?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I'm sure there is a way that you've probably got to date the envelope and you're signing away the fact that you are posting it. I mean, you might have to lodge it. Yeah, I suppose they also stamp it in the post office because they can identify the fact that it's a postal vote.
The franking date where the stamp is cancelled would be the cutoff.
As long as the machine that could read it was supposed to be reading it.
Mm. Well, as I started to tell you earlier, there's invisible ink that computers can read. It's like a magnetic ink.
Oh, right.
It's got all that information.
Mm. All right. But we had, at the beginning of our show, the greeting by Penny Wong.
Mm.
Now, as a result of the Wentworth
by-election...
Can we point out that it was a by-election?
Yes, you bought something, did you?
No, you could be gay or straight or bi and vote. the bi community are really quite welcoming.
And there was a time there where it did appear as though Karen Phelps was going to be pipped at the post.
It was very interesting watching the results coming through, I did on Saturday night.
But I think it was more the people who lost rather than those who won that we should look at.
Yeah, I loved the faux pas that she made when she thanked the people of Warringah and then had to quickly alter it back to Wentworth because Warringah's Tony Abbott's seat.
Wishful thinking.
Across the heads is Tony Abbott's seat.
Oh,
but anyhow, good on you, Dr. Karen Phelps, for doing very well.
Giving the tree a big old shake.
But a couple of the people were saying in the last fortnight, Labor Party ran dead because of where the preferences were. Flow. The Labor Party had to finish third. She had to finish second because then the Labor Party preferences would flow to Dr. Karen Phelps, which is exactly what happened. And that's how she got above the Liberal candidate. It was a bit of dirty politics, I suppose, but then they were never going to win the seat anyhow. So why not get somebody in?
The run-up to the election was rather dirty, as you said, but it was so stupid as well. If in fact she did have HIV, what's the drama?
None. But
there is no drama.
I don't think she would have had any. She's a doctor. No. She's been a doctor, and she's the president of the AMA. And
she knows how to protect herself in all sorts of situations.
And she's got a brain too, which is rather good. Yes, a very good brain.
Now, what else do we know about Karen Phelps?
Well, she was married. She's got three children. I think she has two or three children, and then her partner has another child as well. So they're quite a happy family, actually, yeah. And she's lived in that area mostly all of her life, and she's practiced in that area as a doctor. So she was a local that was well known in the suburbs like Malcolm Turnbull was. But it made me a bit think about the way the government screamed it, because Malcolm Turnbull didn't help them win the election. After you've been turfed out by your party, would you bother to do anything for them? Hello.
That was a real puzzle, that one. Yeah. You gave me the boot and you want what?
Yeah, but he did come back on Monday. He flew in on Monday morning from the States. So
just to say,
that's right, yeah. There you go. Round about this day, on the 18th of October, 1867, someone made a rather good purchase.
Oh, yes, they did too. Didn't cost them much.
About 2 cents an acre.
Because we're talking about Alaska, by the way.
Was it up for sale?
I'm not quite sure, but Russia were in pretty dire straits at the time, apparently, and I think the Americans offered to buy that Alaska from them.
So it was notionally Russian land?
It was Russian land, yeah.
Right. Mm. So things, this is well and truly before the Communist Revolution in 1914.
Oh, yes, yeah. But apparently they were going a bit broke, and then the Americans made them an offer.
The British and the Americans were starting to encroach on Russia's southern borders.
Borders, yeah.
And Russia needed some money, and they thought they'd settle any of those southern disputes by selling them Alaska,
yeah,
which wasn't physically touching.
Did they ask her?
Alaska?
Yeah.
I don't know, but nobody says I have an American accent when I say, I'll ask her. We should be saying, I'll ask her.
Yeah. Yeah, but they said that you could see from from Alaska, you can see Russia. It's it's a very narrow strait across which the water flows.
I think just because Sarah Palin said that, I doubt
it. No. It's a well-known fact that you actually can see one part of it, yeah.
The Aleutian Islands are a little string of pearls between the two, holding them. But I'm sure there's more than the usual curvature of the earth between the islands.
I think right up at the very top of Alaska is where Russia and Alaska are very, very close. Mm. I think you'd be able to see it.
All right, on a good day.
Well, if it wasn't frozen, yeah.
You can see Palin.
Yeah, there we are.
But President Andrew Johnson was derided for the purchase.
Wow.
It was very remote to be of any real value. And then in 1896, the Klondike Gold Rush started.
Yes.
And I think the opinion changed pretty quickly.
It probably
did. But they did two purchases, the Americans, didn't they? They purchased Louisiana from the French. There was another one that they bought.
Mm. And without that, we wouldn't have Dixie cups of ice cream.
Oh, wouldn't we? Oh, okay.
Right. That's where Dixie came from.
Okay.
And it's also the $10 note is a Dixie.
Ah, so it's a French word for 10.
Dix.
Right.
Not that, it's dix.
See, you learn all sorts of interesting irrelevant things.
We're full of useless information.
I do need to point out Alaska is a long, long, long way from America.
Yeah.
I had a Thanksgiving there once.
Oh, right.
And staying at a ski resort at sea level really hurt my brain.
Why?
Because here, we want to see snow, we drive and go up to the mountains.
Yeah.
Here we are on sea level.
Oh, okay.
And they ski on real snow.
Now, I wonder if the local Inuits or whoever they were that were living in that inhospitable country, agreed to this particular change of ownership.
I would say they had no say in it whatsoever. At the time, it would have been just money, money, money.
What would you call a gay Inuit? Would that be an Outuit?
Thank you. Possibly. Very good, very good. But what about our own Australian?
The Indigenous population.
Indigenous population around Uluru.
Well,
on the 26th of October 1985, the Australian government returned ownership of Uluru to the traditional owners.
Note that we didn't sell it back, like the Russians. So no. we gave it back free of charge and said, thank you for loaning us your rock.
Well, let's face it, the local people had been there for 40,000 years or something or other, so why would you?
Mm. Well, I want to see their passports. I'm sounding like the federal government now. Yeah. Prove it.
It goes back to the local indigenous people. It's a magical sort of place for the indigenous people.
Uluru is the name. And it's really at the physical and cultural heart of our nation. Well, the traditional owners have the culture, but physically it is located.
It's almost in the dead centre of Australia. It's quite amazing. And they did an estimation of how much it weighed on the television the other night.
Well, it's like an iceberg. There's what you can see above the surface, and then there's a lot underneath.
But these people did a scan underneath. They went down to see how deep it went. And they calculated that if this much weighed this much, and then how the weight of it comes out to something like a billion tons or something
unimaginable weight.
Just wait till some guy from Western Australia finds a way of mining it.
Oh.
How long will it last?
I don't think he'd get the opportunity somehow.
Well, you would hope not.
No, but it'll be her that would be mining it, not him.
Under the terms of the handover agreement, the Anangu people leased Uluru Catcher National Park to Australian Parks and Wildlife Services for 99 years, ensuring the public's ongoing access as well as continuing funds to the local community. But the rock is now off limits.
Yeah, you can't climb it. They don't want you to climb it. That's the thing. You can still, but if you want to break their traditional things. But it'd be like somebody climbing all over St. Paul's Cathedral or St. Patrick's Cathedral, you know.
It's even more sacred than that. I don't want to be too crude about it, but I'm going to be, because the people are crude. You get caught short when you're at the top of the rock.
Yeah, what do you do?
You can't create a waterfall.
But there's been so many heart attacks from people climbing the rock as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the reasons why they ask people not to do it.
What about dingoes and babies?
No, they were opera singers.
Oh, right.
Domingo's got my baby. I've got an alternative theory. Mm. They don't want you climbing the rock because looking at it from space, the rock is Australia's eject button. So if you get too many people on it, the button will go down and who knows what will happen.
Oh, right. Okay.
You've got to be careful of these things.
We'll all be thrown into oblivion.
Or launched into space.
Oh, well.
That could be Australia's contribution to the space race. We're just a tad late.
No, it's not really, because
there's a new race.
Australia was the second country to send a rocket into space, satellite into space.
What, we throw a stone?
No, from the Woomera rocket range.
Ah, but it came back.
Hmm.
It's like a Woomera.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
And the coming up this week is the Coming Back Out Ball.
On Thursday.
On the 25th of October.
Yeah. You're going?
Ah, yes, I'll be there. Yes, I've got my ticket.
With bells on?
With my bells on, yes.
Queen of the ball.
I won't be the queen of the ball. There'll be a few other people that are much more glamorous than myself. Yes, it's going to be very, very well done again. Yes, they've got some great artists. Meow Meow is going to be singing. She's one of the artists.
Oh, we just had Holly Valance going Kiss Kiss. So
yeah,
meow, meow
Meow Meow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, but it should be, it's the second one. They had one, the first one was last year, which was a huge success.
And this so again is at the Melbourne Town Hall.
The Melbourne Town Hall on the 25th of November. There are tickets still available if you are listening to this. And you can go to the All the Queen's Men's website. You just Google them and that will come up.
So you can have a ball at the hall.
Yes.
You can sell that. Yeah, that's a good tagline.
All I've got to do is find somebody to buy it.
Thank you. Born on the 24th of October 1933 is a local Australian hero in the gay community and for the gay community. And we're talking about Neil Blewett, who was an Australian politician and a Labor Party member. He received a Rhodes Scholarship and a Master of Arts and Political Science, and he is a well-educated and sensible person by the sound of his educational and academic career. He was the Minister for Health in 1987 in the Bob Hawke government. Now, that on the calendar of events in Australia is about the time that the fit hit the shan. That's when the AIDS crisis really kicked in.
It's also the year I moved to California, which I don't see on any of these lists.
And the government of the day was faced with this horrible situation that here we have a medical crisis and how are we going to manage it?
And we were very fortunate, I think, that it was the Labor government that were in there, although the opposition did come on board to do something about it.
Once again, they agreed. The opposition counterpart, Peter Baum, made the difficult decision, both he and Neil Blewett, to throw political differences aside to fight this medical situation. Blewett had said he'd been to the US in 1984, 3 years earlier, and was appalled at how the virus had become a partisan issue between the Republicans and the Democrats, and he was determined that that wouldn't happen in Australia.
Who was the president that wouldn't even mention the word AIDS?
Reagan?
Was it Ronald Reagan? Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be right.
Yeah. Yes.
And so both the Liberals and the Labors got together, and together they worked out the fact that it was a situation that had to be depoliticized.
Well, it would have had to be, because it was affecting people from both sides of the community. It didn't matter whether you were Labor or Liberal, it was affecting both of them.
Yeah.
And the thing was that Dr. Blewett was very, very clever. He decided he would finance it from the ground up, not from the head down, which was one of the things he got the people that were involved, like the people with the AIDS councils and that sort of thing, together, and they had a conference.
Well, he didn't really have much choice because we didn't have a solution at the time. So you had to help the people suffering rather than say, hang on for 10 years while we do some research. Mm. So you had to help them then, even if you didn't have the answers.
Yeah, but it wasn't ostriches with heads in the sand like in the US.
Mm.
That was the thing, that they actually agreed that there was things that you could do.
Well, it was bigger than politics.
It was. Mm. And included the testing of all blood donations for HIV, because suddenly they identified that blood was one of the vectors.
Well, the French medical team discovered that it was a bloodborne disease rather than anything else.
But we learnt that too late, because hemophiliacs were catching HIV.
Yeah.
But also, Neil Blewett and the team worked out that they should reach out to the intravenous drug users. Mm-hmm. And then there was the famous Grim Reaper television advertising campaign, which was, the skeleton with a scythe and the bowling ball coming down, bowling everybody over. And that was because of the threat. I mean, in 1 year, the number of people with HIV was five times the previous year. So it had every opportunity to actually escalate out of control.
But that ad had two effects. It was designed to show that anybody could catch the disease.
Yeah.
Because the bowling ball was just going through to the general community. But what it did was make the gay community look really bad.
Sadly.
Yeah. But it sort of had a little bit of an effect, but it really wasn't that good.
I think in retrospect they've realised that they wouldn't have actually run the Grim Reaper ads as we now
would
tolerate. Yeah.
See, there are young people that have grown up these days that would know nothing about what happened in those early days of the disease. It was just amazing.
As usual, I'm afraid we've got to pick fault with Queensland, because all the states actually had to implement plans, because health, in lots of ways, was under the control of state government.
That's right, yes.
But in the Bjorke-Peterson Liberal government in Queensland, they said, no, thank you very much.
Oh, well, what would Bjorke-Peterson do? Anything else?
He would give them pumpkin scones and hope they got better.
Oh, right. Okay.
But not mention them.
Well, the Commonwealth actually formed a unique relationship with a local nunnery who were offering lots of support. The Sisters of Mercy in Erips, which were running a care mission for people with AIDS, so we used them to launder the money for the AIDS Council in Queensland.
Yes. These nuns have got a lot to answer for since Sound of Music. They've been interfering ever since.
Have they? Yeah. It was a very hard time in Australia when it started, and it's still there. You've still got to be very careful what you do, even though they have new medications and stuff that you can use.
People are going to fall between the cracks.
Oh, look,
there
are people that don't know exactly what they should be doing, yeah.
Well, the men who have sex with men either are going to be unaware of PrEP or too scared to get it.
Yeah, and there was I think we mentioned it a few weeks ago about the fact that there, in, I think it's New South Wales, there are a lot more straight men are are presenting with HIV.
Mm. Mm. So it's good that we've now moved well along the path, but we've got the examples of how we mishandled, or the medicos did handle positively, the initial bursts of the virus.
Yeah, but there was a hell of a lot of hard work and a lot of heartbreak too in the 90s. It was just awful until they finished up with getting the AZT, which was the first one, but almost as bad as having the disease.
Exactly.
We have to thank Dr. Blewett for all that, because had we been in America, we probably wouldn't have had anything like the results
and
we're here.
And he's still alive, is Dr. Blewett, and married to his gentleman boyfriend.
Yes, I heard him speak at a World AIDS Day thing in here in Victoria, and he's a wonderful man, wonderful speaker. Mm.
And he never blew it.
Thanks indeed for being around, Dr. Neil Blewett, here on Joy.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Turn us on anywhere.
And you're listening to Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. We've got some international little snippets to chat about.
Well, I think they want to do some snippets in New Zealand, don't they?
Oh, now, what do you really mean by that?
Well,
you want to make their chaps smaller.
Yes.
And their fashion chaps.
The New Zealand reduced the 30-year wait for gender reassignment surgery. It's a release for the trans community after the country fell behind in offering this procedure.
Now, that's a mysterious headline. What's the story behind that, Gordon?
Well, the New Zealand government, years ago, New Zealand used to be one of the top places to go for gender reassignment surgery. They had a brilliant surgeon there who could do male to female, female to male. But when he retired in 2014... they couldn't do any more. There was no doctors that could do the surgery, you see.
Oh.
And so they had a waiting list that was over 30 years for waiting, and they were...
So they were limited in how much they could do and how frequently they could do it.
They were only limited to do 2 to 3 surgeries a year.
And that was possibly only put in place because of that one doctor.
That's right.
And then when he... So the rule was still there, but he wasn't.
Yeah, but they... But
there was no one else to help him.
But before, I think that they could do... He could do as many as he could. But now the... and it was very cheap to have the surgery done in New Zealand, but now it's gone up in price. And they have changed the law that now the 2 to 3 surgeries a year is the minimum they can do. They must do more than that, so that there's on the waiting list there are 84 male to female people and 27 female to male people. There are 111 people waiting for gender reassignment surgery. Mm.
So, well, that's good.
But it was the Labor government that brought it in. They've changed the rules, which is good for the trans community over there. We're feeling terribly. Left out of the whole situation.
Well,
it was pretty horrible.
Well, their alternatives were that they would have to go overseas.
Well, you go to Thailand or somewhere or something,
or Morocco or some of these other places. Mm. You're not sure exactly what you're going to get, and you certainly wouldn't be supported by your local or the New Zealand Medicare equivalent.
Yeah.
So that would be rather expensive process.
But it's certainly a win for the trans community in New Zealand.
And I don't know whether we've got exchange rights with New Zealand for gender reassignment.
Well, some of them may have been able to get into the list over here or something.
No, well, I think our Medicare card works for general hospital activities.
But not that sort of thing, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Imagine being trapped knowing you're in the wrong body and your government saying, well, you just have to wait.
Yeah,
it must be so painful.
Well, one of the chaps that they interviewed said that he said that he would not have the surgery because of the waiting list. He would be so old by the time he got to be the surgery, the gender reassignment surgery, that it wouldn't be any use to him. You know, so he is now on the list and he's going to be have his operation in November. So good luck to him.
Excellent.
Mm. Well, it must be nice to finally be who you
feel
like.
You want to be. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. But fortunately, we're having it's changed a little bit now here in Australia because we have these, the clinic at the Children's Hospital. If the children feel that they are not in the right body, they can go, and the parents are good about it. They will take the child to the doctor and they can then discuss it openly and clearly.
Yeah. And get so the kid will know that they're fine.
Yeah,
they're not a freak.
They're not a freak.
And their feelings are valid and we can fix it.
That's right. Yeah. So that's
there's still a few people who are freaking out and thinking that it's a fad, it's a fashion.
Oh, yes. To change your it's gender. Like, it's like you choose to be gay. Yeah, well, that's a fad and fashion, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, I'd vote for it.
another report here. Thousands of Canadians have come out in signed petitions calling for conversion therapy to be banned.
Why is it that something that is so obviously wrong on so many different levels isn't just banned? Why is it hard?
Because it's a religious belief that you can do these sort of stupid things to people and change what they are.
Let me be the devil's advocate. On one hand, we are saying of ourselves, we are God's children, we are made in the image of God. But then the trans people are trying to say, but what you see is not what is actually inside. But, you know, how far did God organise all this thing? It's from the religious point of view.
Yeah, but
outside and insides as well.
Yeah, but
he got it wrong.
But gay conversion is a bit different to having an operation to change your gender and sexuality. But it's these gay conversion people, and there's apparently a very good movie coming out. It won't be released until November about this whole thing about gay conversion. It's I've seen reviews of it, and it's supposed to be a very good movie. But we do it here in Australia, which is illegal in most states to do it in Australia. But they don't say that they're converting them. They're just helping them.
Oh yeah, of course.
They're telling gay people that they are wrong.
Yeah.
That they're against nature and against God. That's not exactly a pick-me-up.
Nothing good
can come out of that.
Of course not.
Well, you know, the Canadian Psychiatric Society opposes the use of these treatments programs, and Canada's psychiatrists are united. Being gay or bisexual or transgendered or asexual, whatever your sexual orientation, gender identity or gender expression, is not a mental health issue.
Of course it's not.
So They've decided to, and in fact, the Pan American Health Organization and World Health explains that such practices lack medical justification, are ethically unacceptable, and represent a severe threat to the health and human rights of the subjects.
Well, of course it does. Look,
yeah.
You know,
so I think Canada is catching up with the rest of the world, although, of course, as we know, there's some states here in Australia that still
do it, sort of. Yeah, behind closed doors. Yeah, beauty nuke.
Nasty, yeah.
But it's even worse in America, of course, which is, yeah. But anyhow, good old Canada is coming to the party.
Yeah, but I've got a note here that police reports across North America have identified conversion therapy as a contributing factor in numerous teen suicides.
Of course it is, yeah.
Because if you're just being told
that you're not
by your parents and your church that you shouldn't exist, you need to change, everything is wrong.
Yeah, certainly play with your mind.
It's not fair.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about playing with your mind. A quick little story here, which actually got featured also in TV and radio here in Australia. But apparently some men arrested for sex in a pleasure emporium actually encountered a sympathetic judge who threw out the case that the policeman had tried to hold against these fellows who'd been accosted. Well, they're picked up by the police, picked up by the fuzz, inside the emporium.
But the thing is that they were in a private place.
Yes.
They were not out in the open.
Yes.
Nobody was seeing what they were doing.
No.
And so what right did the police have to go into that place and do it?
I can answer that. By the location, Hollywood, Florida. We're not talking Hollywood, California.
No.
We're talking rednecks on rednecks.
Oh, right. Yeah, but the judge realised that the police had no right to go and do it, so they threw the charges. But the worst part about it was the two people that took them to court and had their charges thrown out were exonerated, nothing happened. But there were people that had been caught that pleaded guilty and got fined and sentenced and now have got a charge against their names.
And, of course, a couple of the people had also already identified themselves and their names were published.
Mm.
And so they lost their jobs at their employment.
Well, that's what happens in America.
Oh, well,
Well, it's what happened in the 1960s, and that brings us back to Florida.
you mean like Queensland, is it?
Oh, it's the sunshine. It doesn't fade the carpets. It gets to the brain.
You're on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that. Gordon, Phil and Chris.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. We complain about the church, the Catholic Church especially, although up in Sydney, the Anglican Church...
Oh, the Anglicans are going well, aren't they?
They're going a little berserk.
Yes, you can't even do yoga if you have a Hindu philosophy or something.
Or have a smoking ceremony. Oh, golly gosh, there you go.
But they did a nine-country survey... Yeah. Of what the Catholics thinks about LGBTI community.
Now, these are the people in the street in Catholic countries.
These are people, there were 9,600 and something odd of them odd in these nine countries. They're the biggest Catholic countries in the world. You can name them if you like.
Okay, Brazil, Colombia, France, Italy, Mexico, the Philippines, Spain and the US.
And 63% of them said that the church should be more accommodating for the LGBTI community. Now, what would that do to Mr. Ruddock's thing that's just come out about the children in Catholic schools or church schools and stuff? You know, does that go anywhere near it?
I think that is becoming such a little hot potato that won't be released before the next election either, because I think someone who's already got a copy of it will toss out a few more hand grenades from that.
I did read it a bit in the paper that somebody thought that it was one of Mr. Turnbull's time bombs.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think it's not going to be nice. But that's interesting that those Catholic countries really want the story changed.
Well, they want the Pope to be more accommodating with the LGBTI community. And that's fair enough too. I mean, to say I know some gay people that are very involved in their Catholic Church, but they also feel not as involved as they could be. Yep. You know. Yeah. So
are they out of church?
Well, I probably not. I don't think so. I don't think they wear the rainbow.
So how can you feel connected when you're isolated by the church that you want to believe in?
Yeah.
Now we've got a Melbourne girl who's having a birthday round about this time. Who have we got there? Do you think?
I think she's got a very famous half sister, actually.
Toni Lamont.
That's right.
However, we're talking about the Australian arts scene, and we're talking specifically about Helen Reddy. Now, the Australian singer who's more these days identified as a US singer.
I think she's actually retired, hasn't she?
She probably has. As from 2011, she's had a revised career.
Maybe because of the Me Too movement, with the song I Am Woman.
No, well, she was part of the feminist movement of the 70s, the revitalization of that, and she came out with the song I Am Woman.
She's the first Australian to go to number one in America.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Might have been the first Australian woman to win a Grammy.
Yes, probably is that as well.
Although, as The Simpsons would teach us, we don't really brag about winning a Grammy.
Don't we? Okay.
Nothing really to be proud of.
And also having a star on the Walk of Fame in Hollywood. Oh, there's about 2,000 stars there now.
It's a little known fact about that.
What is this little known fact?
You got to pay for it. You pay the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce.
Oh.
I've heard various numbers, but they're in the tens of thousands. And I'm not too sure if that gets you onto a short list or something to be voted on. But, it's not... nobody ever mentions that, and you're all very happy when you get a star. But there's sort of like, well, there's my name.
But they have various sections now for film stars and radio stars and music stars and that sort of thing, don't they?
Yeah.
They're just in different sections now of the Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Helen Reddy was born on the 25th of the 10th, 1941. But she is well and truly in the thick and thin of gender rights.
Well, the thing that I Am Woman was
equality,
I Am Woman was sung in because women weren't equal in the 70s in almost any other country in the world, and she just brought out this song, and it just went viral everywhere. Everybody was singing it, and it made women feel a bit more empowered, which they should be. And it's lovely to see that. We're going back to our very first article. We're getting another woman into Parliament, which is going to be great. I listen to a lot of talkback shows, and the women on these talkback shows on the television are usually so intelligent. You know, you wonder, where the devil have they been? They can talk on the subject, and they're just wonderful.
We had earlier this week the exhibition, I'm going to call it, of the Prime Minister of this week, anyway, I think.
That's what they ask you when they're testing what your mental capabilities is when you get old. They ask you the name of the Prime Minister. How do you remember them?
But someone is making someone was making an apology, and people have said, "Hold on, Mr. Prime Minister, are you genuine about this, or is this just an advertising campaign?"
Well, you mentioned the Me Too movement. Well, I think now when you're Prime Minister, you just have to apologise for something.
Yeah.
But you should really say, "I'm sorry, I'm Prime Minister."
Yes, I must admit that I listened to it and I was getting very, very annoyed. Mm. I was really, it wasn't.
No, the people who need to apologise are those who committed the offences.
Well, started the whole thing off. Yeah. Yes, yes. And as they said, somebody wrote into one of the papers that said, "Oh, well, Mr. Dutton and Mr. Abbott, it's called karma."
Yeah, I saw that yesterday, or whenever it was. Gorgeous little statement.
It was a very clever little statement. Anyhow, back to Helen Reddy with her I Am Woman. She was the one that was promoting the women's side of everything.
Well, it was an angry song.
Yeah, well,
it wasn't a pretty song.
But it had to be angry because they were not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it was a song of its time, really, because in the 70s, women were being put down all over the place. They were barefoot, pregnant, and at the sink.
Not the ones with the pill.
Oh. On the 19th of October 1945 was born Harris Glenn Milstead. And as a name, we probably don't recognise that. But in his other form, his alter ego, he was Divine.
Wasn't
now,
he Divine?
The 300-pound transvestite star of Pink Flamingos, Hairspray and other John Waters films, who died on the 7th of March 1988. You've all seen Hairspray, surely, remake everything.
Did he die of a heart attack?
Well, I should think so, being 300
300 pounds. He was a very large person, yes. Yeah. But he was very, very out there. He didn't care what he did. Yeah.
In a 1976 interview, Glenn Milstead said that he was part of the time-honoured tradition of men playing women's roles. But I don't do Judy Garland or Mae West, and I'm not a female impersonator. I'm an actor.
Yes, well, that's similar to Barry Humphries with Dame Edna. He's an actor. Mm. Playing
Which is,
a part.
Is that a distinction?
Oh, a bit. Yeah.
Because a female impersonator would consider themselves an actor.
Yeah, well, that's...
Yeah, but he didn't have fame as Glenn Milstead. He only had fame as the alter ego.
Well, he probably was never recognised as himself.
Yeah.
There was a significant amount of makeup applied.
Oh, with the
size you'd need it.
And the hair pulled right back. I mean, there's a blonde bald wig or something, and those huge dark eyebrows and the big pink lips. Not a pretty sight, but...
You'd be a bit scared if you're walking in the dark and saw it.
Well, carried off this alter ego.
Well, it
could be something that he personally, as a male, didn't want to be or couldn't be.
He made a living out of being what he was, so that was the main thing, I guess.
Divine was a name, not a description.
I think you think he might have been having a second sort of a turnaround
a,
go.
A dig at himself.
Yeah, digging himself, yeah. Called himself Divine, and he wasn't. Yeah, well, that's fair enough. But he was very good in Hairspray. He was very, very clever in Hairspray.
Oh, in a couple of the other films, Flamingo, I think.
Yeah, Flamingos.
They were a little bit revolting.
Well, he did.
I think this is when he was creating his new persona, and he had to draw attention to the darker side of life.
Yes, well, eating dog poo doesn't sort of. That's what he did.
I was skirting around. I was trying not to put my foot in it.
You don't want to put your foot in it because you drag it in on the carpet.
Golly gosh. Someone else who's having a birthday around about this time, on the 23rd of October 1954, is Ang Lee, the Taiwanese film producer. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yes.
The Ice Storm, Hulk. Sense and Sensibility, Life of Pi, and Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain would probably be, it's probably his best known one in our community.
Yeah.
But his Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was a superb movie. The effects in that movie were just stunning. Beautifully filmed. And I saw...
How much of his heredity, his Taiwanese culture came through in these films, or perspective in life.
And the leading lady in The Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is now much older, of course, and she was the mother in Crazy Rich Asians, which was... Yes, she was in that as well. And I recognised her. I thought, where have I seen your face? And it wasn't until George, my partner, said she was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and I realised who she was,
But he wasn't interested in making average movies.
Oh, no, no, he was
like
not.
The Ice Storm, he didn't think twice of killing off one of the better characters.
No, no, he was. But he would go with the story, and the stories were always just that off, that little bit off. They were not
somewhat
total
left
mainstream.
Of centre.
But he was a brilliant filmmaker. He is a brilliant filmmaker. He hasn't passed away yet, so not...
Well, don't say yet.
No. Yeah, we're still here yet.
We are, and hopefully we'll be here...
next week.
Same place, same time, or whenever you're listening to us on a podcast or on our rebroadcast, our encore times.
Mm.
Yeah, so if we all die before next week, you can still listen to us.
Yes.
Have happy thoughts.
Happy thoughts, yes.
See you next week.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.